Very good. So welcome everybody to this 2019 October retreat, or November retreat. Yes, close enough. So first of all, is everybody, are we still waiting for a few more people, or is everyone in? I think those who are coming have come. Good. So you've already been given a few tips from Bianca on this retreat. It's learning how just to relax to the max on your body, first of all. Because what happens with the body, if the body gets tired and weak, it makes it very difficult to meditate. Not impossible, but just makes it a little bit more difficult. So you find usually the first few days, if you've had a busy life, especially if you come from overseas, you'll find that you are a bit sort of stressed, tired, and it will take a while before the body gets used to a retreat like this. So it's one of the reasons, ooh, the lights are up. I see limiters. I was just saying earlier, just had a little interview about Buddhist meditation on death. That's what happens. You see the light, and I'm going to go to the light. My days are numbered. No, just to let people know, if you get scared, I'm not allowed to die. So one of the monks over in Thailand, Ajahn Gunha, he told me that in public, which was the worst part of this, that he told me in public that if I stop teaching, I will die. So I cannot refuse any invitations to go overseas or to teach here, because people don't want me to die. So it's really a shame. I'd like to retire. I'm old enough to retire now, but you won't let me. Anyway, I promise not to go to the light and die, except to get to the nimittas and jhanas. But over here we learn how to relax our body. And of course, part of that means just having a good rest, good sleep. Those of you who've never been here before, sometimes you wonder why it is we've just got such comfortable rooms for you. Rooms which are private, you have your own ensuite, nice beds. And the reason for that is that the physical comfort is important when you meditate. If you are having aches and pains, then you might think that you're getting somewhere, but if you want to go to an achy, painy retreat, this is not the place. Even years ago, when I went to this retreat over in Sydney, the person who took me there, who drove me from the airport to the retreat, he used to say that he'd been to retreats there before, and he'd had a nickname for the retreat hall, the meditation hall. It was the torture chamber. So every time he went into the meditation hall, it was like going into the torture chamber. And I thought, what type of meditation are they teaching you there? It's certainly not the type of meditation which Ajahn Brahm teaches. And so that's where I told him, look, just to change your attitude. And so I made a nickname for the meditation hall in that place in Sydney, not the torture chamber, but the entertainment center. In other words, then the meditation which you're going to experience can be a lot of fun, a lot of happiness, in fact, very blissful. Because that's how I read the Buddha teaching meditation. Meditation leading to deep relaxation of the body, deep stillness of the mind, and enormous joy coming up in your meditation. If I couldn't access that type of joy, what I've been doing 45 years as a monk now, crikey, you couldn't stand it if it was tough all that time. Even if you do an offence of murder, you don't get 45 years in jail. You get parole. But anyway, so I'm not here because this is tough. You're here because this is joyful and blissful, and that is part of the path which the Buddha taught. So anyway, that is one of the reasons why we make sure that the rooms are comfortable for you. Why we do have a schedule here, but the only two important parts of the schedule are breakfast and lunch. The rest of the time, work around that. Yeah, I have the talks and the instructions, but we want you to be sort of comfortable. And this is not indulgence. This is getting you into this beautiful, peaceful lifestyle of a retreat. Yes, we do have precepts which you're supposed to keep, but those precepts are just personal for you. In other words, the ordinary five precepts and the extensions, so that during this retreat there's no sort of sensuality like sexuality. There is no movies, or if you want any entertainment, please come on the evening talk. There's many funny stories which I will tell you there. And the what else is there? The food is nice and simple. We try not to eat in the evening time. There's many other alternatives which you may have. And that if you are really sick, you need antibiotics, or you have other great diseases, then you can always ask Bianca, and you can always ask me, to get something for the evening just so your stomach is not too sick. So that way that you can live a comfortable life here. If any of you have heard other retreats and other monks talk and nuns talk, there's a reflection on when we eat. And the reflection is, the core of it is to overcome feelings of hunger and not arouse other feelings of overeating or other painful feelings, so we can live comfortably and at ease. The purpose of eating food. So in other words, eat as, you know, what you need, don't overeat, and also just so that you can feel comfortable. And if it is the case that you, for some medical condition, you do need something in the evening, medical condition doesn't mean psychological condition, that you're afraid of what might happen if you can't eat at night. You do very well. I haven't eaten at night for the last 45 years, and look at me, I'm not thin. So because of that, just make sure that you have enough for breakfast and lunch, and the afternoon and evening is free of food, so we don't have to cook, we don't have to do very much, and it's quite a simple thing to do. And but don't make it just forceful, and don't feel guilty about stuff, because I know that when you go on a retreat, sometimes people do sneak biscuits and other stuff in their luggage into their rooms. But always remember that story. I'm not encouraging you. If you can do without, wonderful. But I do remember that story of this Anagarika who came here. Anagarika is these people who want. So we've got any Anagarikas here? Now, where have they gone to? I don't know. Oh, well, no. One day, Matthias. You're wearing white anyway. So anyway, that this Anagarika just come to Perth, hopefully to try and become a monk, keeping the eight precepts. And the eighth precept, one of those eight precepts, was not eating in the evening. And this young man, he came up to see me early in the morning, and he said he hadn't slept all night. He felt really guilty. He'd broken one of his precepts, and he wanted to confess his crime. Well, what have you done? Have you killed somebody? I've seen all the monks here. He said, no. What terrible act have you done? And he was just so embarrassed and ashamed. And he said, last night I was hungry. And he went into the kitchen. And we don't have security in the kitchen, as you probably already found out. And he said, I went in there and I made myself a sandwich. And I ate it. I broke my precepts. What are you going to do? Please don't throw me out. And it's what really amazes me is the guilt which people have. That's even worse. They feel so guilty they've done something wrong. Instead of in our Buddhist tradition, if we do make a mistake, what do? We acknowledge it. Bring it up. So let somebody know and then forgive it. No punishment. We learn from our mistakes. We don't punish them. We learn from them. And so, you know, I told him, well, you know, that you've acknowledged you've done a mistake. You should have done that earlier. Then you would have had to, actually you couldn't really come and see me in the middle of the night. But then I would have got any sleep. But he didn't have any sleep because he didn't confess until the morning. But very good, you confessed. Now, there's so many things you can eat in the afternoon or evening. You can see all the stuff which is put out for you. And I said, so you can eat some of that. And also I said, that make sure you eat more for lunch. And I said, so, no, you're forgiven. Just try and be restrained in the future. And that's when this young Anagarika, he looked at me and said, that is not good enough. What do you mean? And he said, I need to be punished. I need some sort of penance, because he said, this is my nature. If I don't get something to remind me I've made a big mistake, I'll do it again for sure. You know, there are people like that. So I had to give him a punishment, a penance. So what can I do to punish this fellow who didn't really have too much idea of what Buddhism was? So I told him. So that morning, I'd been reading a book about the early history of Australia. And in that book, they told about the punishments they used to give to those convicts who came to this land. Very cruel punishments with the whip called the Cat of Nine Tails. And so I looked at him and I said, I have fresh in my mind memories of the stories which I've been reading the day before. And I said, okay, if you want a punishment, I will sentence you to 50 strokes of the cat. And you know, if ever you've seen any Bhutanese, I went to this Bhutanese monastery some years ago. I know they have this disciplined monk. And he actually does have a whip. And he whips people. And it was really scary. Because I was told by the guide that it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're not a member of the monastery, if you're not the same tradition, even if you're just visitors, tourists, you say anything wrong, whack. That was really scary. And I remember the guy came out when we were visiting and he had this whip and he whacked it on the ground. I thought almost automatically I took a step back, make sure I'm out of reach. You never know what you might do wrong. And anyway, that's really scary. So anyway, this young man, as soon as I told him the punishment, you know what happened to him? His face went whiter than the clothes he was wearing. And his lips started to sort of wobble in fear. He actually thought, it's amazing how little he knew about this place and about real Buddhism. He really thought he was going to be flogged. And so I told him, 50 strokes of the cat in Bodhinyana Monastery, what it really means. We had two cats. Find any one of them and stroke it 50 times. And learn some compassion and kindness, you hard, negative, violent young man. So So that was his punishment, 50 strokes of the cat. We don't have cats here anymore. We do have teddy bears. So anyone who does something wrong, 50 strokes of the teddy bear. Because this was some deep psychology there, knowing that sometimes that being kind to yourself is one of the most powerful ways of overcoming your negativity and even the reasons why people think they're not good enough and need to be punished, or why they even actually break precepts, because they're not kind. So anyway, I told him that and he understood it. So even here, anybody who breaks those precepts, I think Bianca knows exactly what food and how many pieces of bread are out there. So if a few of them in the morning, oops, I'll be sentencing you to 50 strokes of the teddy bear. So that means that our precepts and our rules are not something we're afraid of, but something we see the meaning behind. Why are we going to do these precepts? All they are is precepts of kindness and simplicity. And of course, it's not just the eight precepts, it's the ninth precept as well, which is not using your mobile phones and other devices in a temple. Sometimes you think, but, there might be something important happening at home. I've got to find out, you know, who's winning the football or the cricket or whatever else is going on in this world. I must find out what's happening. No, you don't. Years ago over in Thailand, I didn't know what was going on in the world because we didn't have any radios, no TVs, no newspapers. And it was weird that when I did find a newspaper, I found actually the news was all the same as, you know, the 2 or 3 years ago when I read it. It just, you know, still the same old corruptions and wars and politicians being scandalous. The only difference was the names had changed. The same sort of bad actions and corruption and stuff, just different people. Just like my old jokes, I keep on telling them all again because it's just people just do keep doing the same old stuff. So anyway, so you don't need to look at your iPhones. You don't need to check on the internet. You don't need to be disturbed about what's happening in the world. Nothing really changes, only the actors change, the people. So, can you do that? You know, we tried really hard. One of the advantages of this location was I had very bad connectivity. You know, to even for the office over there, we have to get a satellite connection because the nearest mobile phone tower, we're in a hollow here, and the nearest mobile phone tower can't actually reach us. I thought. But then I found all the people walking around with their mobile devices trying to find out where the best signal is. And you can find it. It's up the top there by the gate or by the water tanks. So I might as well tell you now before you go. What are you doing that for? You don't need to make those, tell those emails. So one of the things which hopefully you can do on a retreat is actually just let people know, let your friends, if you've got a mother or father who's about to die or, you know, is really sick or there's some big problems, just tell them just to telephone the Jhana Grove number, leave a message. And only if it's really important can you actually just turn on your machine and get contact. Otherwise, just leave it alone. So that way they can have a nice peaceful time here. Even years ago, over in San Francisco, they had a retreat. No, a retreat, it was a conference. And it was called the theme of the conference, and it was all of the founders of, you know, the big IT industry over in Silicon Valley. The theme of the conference was Disconnect to Connect. It's a very wonderful name, Disconnect from your mobile devices to connect with your body, with nature, with your mind, with truth. To disconnect, to connect. Because that's what you're here for. To understand about your body and mind and how it all works. So, that's the ninth precept. Now what happens when people break their precepts? That is their responsibility, no one else's. In other words, don't go around sort of telling on people. Ajahn Pam, that person in my heart, they're on their mobile phone all the time. I don't know how they get a signal. But they're just there eating. You can hear them chewing the biscuits in the evening. So we are owners of our karma, so it's up to us what we do. Your job is to just make sure that you don't allow people to upset you. So your practice is your responsibility. Theirs is theirs. We don't have CCTV cameras in your room, so at least I'm not admitting it. No, we don't. So in other words, that you're responsible for your practice here. And a little bit of restraint, a little bit of kindness, a little bit of simplicity does a lot to help your meditation. And of course, you do need to relax physically as well. It's the fear of making mistakes, the fear of doing something wrong is also what makes it difficult for us to create deep meditation and to get the wisdom which comes from deep meditation. So you have your own little rooms, a lot of freedom. You don't have to come to every meditation, everything on the schedule. This is for you. That's why we don't have hardly any bells here. I've got the gong here, which is, it's a singing bell. So it's not just gong. Because it's just personal experience. Just sometimes I was getting really deep in meditation, and then I'm just about to get enlightened. Gong. That's an exaggeration, of course, but it was so disturbing, the bells. And there was other times, especially when I was under Ajahn Chah, when, he was going on for such a long time, and he wouldn't ring the bell. And I was getting really tired, or very, very painful, sitting down there. So that's when I started having all of these schemes I started thinking about. One of those schemes was get a slingshot. I had lots of slingshots over there, just two pieces of wood with a piece of rubber, and practicing in my hut, practicing until I was so accurate that when I wanted the bell to ring, I could just aim for it, and bing! And then all the monks would bow, and we'd all be gone before Ajahn Chah found out. Of course, he would probably found out before then. But anyway, I never did it. But that's a sort of stupidity when, you're controlled by bells. So it's one of the reasons why you don't find bells here. It's up to you when you get up in the morning. It's up to you, when you go to bed and how much you sit for. Sometimes you're really good in meditation. Sometimes you hit the spot and you meditate for a long time. Hours. Don't let bells interrupt you. Just go for it. Sometimes at night time. I remember so often, just in even the early retreats we did here, in the evening you're getting very, very peaceful, really sort of getting into some deep stuff. And then you thought, I've got to get up in the morning, I better go to bed now. And you wasted a lot of deep meditation. Or, were meditating a lot, and you had to stay up for the talk or whatever, and you're really, really tired or sick, and you really want to get up early in the morning. Sometimes early in the morning is a beautiful time to meditate here. It's nice and quiet, no one disturbs you. So sometimes that the bells and schedules were going against the nature of my meditation. And somehow my meditation didn't fit into schedules, as yours doesn't either. So make your own schedule. That's just a rough idea. There will be chanting in the morning, And there will be sort of meditation and breakfast at that particular time. But please don't be a slave to schedules. So when you're meditating, make sure that it's a time when you feel like you want to meditate. And you feel physically comfortable as well. So while we also have the chairs, I have to say this every time, we have chairs. What do we have chairs for? To sit on. So if your legs are tired or achy or something, then sit on a chair, for goodness sake. That's what those chairs are there for. And if you feel, oh no, I'd sit on the floors, you have to sit on the floors to get enlightened, no way. You get some of the deepest meditations sitting on a chair, or even laying on your bed, or just in your room. Sometimes your room can be a cave for you. So you can close the shutters, get a nice cushion there, and sit meditation in your room in the morning, or in the afternoon or the evening. So you're not worried about people coming and going. Make use of this place. So we're trying to, open up more ideas of how to meditate and how to make use of the physical surroundings of this monastery. Even if you want to meditate outside. And again, because I like sometimes sitting out there on the stupas. If it's a nice warm day, in the evening, the stone of those stupas soaks up the heat. And so it's a beautiful place to sit meditation at night time. And some of these nights, you can even lay on your back and watch the Milky Way. If you come from countries where you just don't see the stars because of the pollution, just be able to do that. Just lie on your back on these warm stones and just watch these stars with your eyes open. It really makes you very peaceful and inspired. Of course, get the right day. In other words, when it's been warm during the daytime and it soaks up the sun. And beautiful out there. So there's many places where you can do sort of some relaxing meditation. And if we try to keep quiet, so in other words, there's no need to have conversations with one another. Sometimes when you've got your friends here, people you may remember and you catch up with the first day, you're here, well, okay, have a conversation, say hello, how are you, how are you going? But for goodness sake, try and stop the conversations by tomorrow. So you can go past each other, but don't look miserable to each other. You can always smile. Smile is not against any precept at all. And sometimes that's all it really needs for someone to be lifted up, to give them a good smile. But don't go to talking with one another. But noble silence doesn't mean being stupid and shutting up all the time. For example, if there is a snake and someone is about to step on it, you don't say noble silence, and you don't try and mime a snake. You're not allowed to speak, and you go, because by the time they figure out, what you're trying to tell them, they've already been bitten. So just, use your common sense. If you need to say something, just, snake or fire. That means you're not really breaking your precepts of trying to be quiet. Noble silence. Noble silence is different than stupid silence. And also when somebody starts to do too much talking, and you go up and say, you shouldn't be talking, it's against the precepts, you are disturbing me. And then you've talked more than they have. Which is one of the reasons why if a person does make a noise, if they do bang the doors, or if they do what they do in the morning, making a cup of coffee, at 1 o'clock in the morning, stirring it up. If you do make a cup of coffee, or tea in the middle of the night, please do it quietly. Just mindful. You don't need to make such a noise when you stir it up or you boil something. You don't need to make such a noise when you open the doors and close the doors. Now, people who come to a retreat like this, now you're usually pretty sort of good people. You know, you're kind people. You have some sort of virtue or ethics to be able to come here. And just think, even burglars can go into a house without making any noise, so surely you can do better than that. They don't bang the doors. So be quiet when you come and go, out of kindness to others. And if you do make a noise and other people hear you, what do you do? Give them the one finger sign. Shh. That's not breaking your precepts. That's not breaking noble silence. So that means reminding people with kindness to try and be quiet. But also for your own practice, as Ajahn Chah used to say, it's not the noise disturbs us, it's we who disturb the noise. And what did he mean by that? The origin of that was when, in the monastery I was staying about 43 years ago, the villagers had a party. And it was a time when they just discovered or just had the first electricity generators, amplifiers, and so that they really just went really over the top, and they were just such loud noise. I wouldn't have minded if it was music I liked. It was horrible music and really amplified, and it went on to about 2 o'clock in the morning. So there's no way you can go to sleep before about 2:05. And at 3 o'clock, we rang the bell to get up. So we only had a tiny amount of sleep. We didn't mind that for 1 day or 2 days. When it went on for 3 or 4 days, apparently that what they would do, and it was well known in that part of the world, that they would have the party and get quite drunk, and then when they'd wake up, have some breakfast and start all over again and carry on like that. And anyway, it was very difficult for us. And so we sent a delegation to act. They wouldn't listen to us. No, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Give us an hour or two sleep. But no, they wouldn't listen to us. We were only Western monks. But we thought they would listen to Ajahn Chah. And so we sent a delegation over to Ajahn Chah, please, we haven't slept well for nights. Can you please tell the villagers now to turn down the noise? And that was when Ajahn Chah told us, it's not the noise disturbs you, you who disturb the noise. It's not what we wanted. But it's actually what we needed. And always remember that. If somebody does bang the doors, the noise from the doors being banged lasts for how long? Maybe a couple of seconds. But if you disturb the noise, you start thinking, who was that? Oh, it's that girl. You know, she always bangs the doors. She's hopeless. I don't know why. She always comes on this retreat, always banging doors. You know, somebody needs to tell her how to be a bit more mindful and compassionate for others. You know, I don't know, because she's wealthy and she has servants and no one tells her off anyone else, but this is the retreat centre, it's not by her home. She should be really quiet when she... And it's just disturbing not only me, but many people. She's not mindful. She needs to be told a lesson. And the door has stopped a long time ago. But the noise between her ears is going on and on and on and on and on. That's what we mean by, it's not the noise disturbs you, you disturb the noise. It's a distraction, it's gone. But the echoes which resound in a person's mind out of negativity, that is the real problem. So, don't disturb the noise. And that way, you can live a nice, peaceful life. There will be noises here. That's what, you know, part of life. You can't ignore that. We try to get a nice, peaceful place, but who knows what's going to happen next. So, that way we can learn how to relax in this monastery. In this, well, it's more of a monastery. It's in this retreat center. So we can relax, and the first few days we can just ease our way in to a peaceful abiding so that our body can become tranquil. The tranquility of the body, it just feels good. And when it feels good, it means that you can learn how to relax. In the meditation which I'm teaching, and I'll teach you a little bit more deep tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, it's all about being aware of your body and relaxing it. Understanding how you should be sitting, whether you need to rest. I was saying this to a in a conference of medical conference yesterday, that sometimes that it's weird. Sometimes that I've had a good sleep, everything seems to be going well. You've got a free morning or free afternoon, you think, I need to go to bed and have a rest. No, you can't, that's indulging. But now I know my body, I can actually feel it. It wants to have some rest. And I know it's right, because sometimes I go to bed and just as soon as my head hits the pillow, it just out. And I get up an hour later and feel so good. I don't know what my body's done, but my body said you need to take a rest, a break. And I've taught that here for many times. People come up to me in the interviews or other times and they said, oh, I'm just not getting anywhere. I'm just, you know, my body's aching, my mind is restless. Can you give me a meditation to do? I said, yes, go to bed. They said, oh, I can't do that. You know, it's only got here for 9 days. You know, I can't waste time. I said, go to bed. Well, you know, that's indulgence. Go to bed. I don't know why it is, but sometimes I have to argue with them to get them to go to bed. And so they go to bed and they say, you know, just lay down. And just when you wake up, just have a shower, a cup of tea, whatever it is. And then afterwards, come and then meditate. And they always tell me that after they've relaxed their body and then they go to meditate, they usually get one of the best meditations of the retreat. And that's telling them a lesson. So I'm describing it to you, describing a lesson for you. You're relaxing the body. You're working with the body. The body does not belong to you. It's not a slave and a servant which you can order around. You try that and you get very tense and sick. Don't try and control your body. It's not a slave. You work with your body as a friend. And then also you learn to do the same with your mind. People think that you come here to train the body and train the mind. In other words, so I can follow your orders. Time to meditate. Get up. Come on, get up, body. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. Come on, up. Come on, sit. Come on, don't sneeze. Come on, don't wander off. Have you ever noticed that your mind always wanders off when you have an attitude like that? You can't stay still. Why? It is because your mind has had it up to here with you, telling you what to do. You're treating it badly, so it runs away. So instead, be kind to your mind. Mind, how are you this evening? Would you like to meditate? Or would you like to think some weird fantasy? What would you like to do, mind? And your mind will say, oh, actually, I like this fellow. He doesn't tell me what to do. He doesn't try and control me. So, okay, I'll hang out with you. So let's meditate together. A friend, if you have someone who you know, thinks a friend and they always tell you what to do and how to do it, Are they really a friend? Or is that your mother? Always telling you what to do and how to do it, come on. But no, you make sure that you're a friend to your mind. So you go together with the mind. So little by little, you have a relaxed body, a relaxed mind, a peaceful mind. This is what I will say tomorrow about the peaceometer. Just have a thermometer, you have a speedometer, you have all these other meters for telling you what's going on. This is your peaceometer. How peaceful are you inside? How peaceful is your mind? So once you know the peaceometer, how peaceful your mind is, you also know how to make the mind more peaceful. What makes it agitated? And little by little, we learn the secrets of having a peaceful mind. This is what we learn here. So little by little, you learn how to make your own mind really peaceful. Once your mind is peaceful, once your body is relaxed, then we can start doing meditation. We can start doing things like watching our breath, and it's so easy once you've done the preparation. Otherwise, if you think, okay, I've only got 9 days or 8 days or 7 days, I don't know how long we've got here, but if you go and say, right, breath, haven't got long, I'm going to watch my breath, come on. That is treating your breath like a slave. And it will just rebel. You'll get frustrated. Instead, make your mind peaceful, first of all. Make the body relax. Start to feel good. And then your breath is your friend. It's just so easy to watch the breath. It's a basic Anapanasati Sutta. You do the preparations, first of all, before you even start watching a breath. Your first priority to is establish mindfulness as a priority. So you can be in this present moment. You can just be without too much disturbance of thoughts. The mind is tranquil. The body is at peace. Your peaceometer has a low reading inside your mind. So there's nothing much to disturb you from doing something like watching the breath. Well, how come you can't watch the breath? It's just the body is aching and tired or sick. And the mind has got all these things to think about. Calm those two down first of all. And then it's easy to watch the breath. And then when you start to watch the breath, and it's easy, you can watch the breath for hours. It gets very still and very peaceful. And then you start getting into the juicy type, part of meditation. When you get some nimittas coming up and piti sukha, ooh, this is nice. And it all comes from doing a lot of preparation. And I like showing gratitude. And I remember just the gratitude for doing all of that preliminary work and really focusing on it. I have to give that to my predecessor here, Ajahn Jacopo. Oh, I go and see him now every year or two. Last time was last June over in Chicago. He's not a monk anymore, he's John. But anyway, he's still a really good friend, and I always got a lot of gratitude for those little bit of advice. He said, Ajahn Brahmi, really good teaching about nimittas and jhanas and all that sort of stuff, but you don't explain enough about how to even get close to those, the preliminary stages. So he said, now can you please, it's beautiful feedback, can you please emphasize when you teach how to even get to the place where you can just watch your breath for a long time without any disturbance? So that's what we're going to be talking about a lot. How to be able to sit here, watching your breath, breathing in, breathing out. Oh, really nice. There's not a care in the world except just the breath happening now. Breathing in, breathing out. So easy, not wanting anything because you're totally content Watching the breath come in, watching the breath go out. And you get more and more still, more and more energized, and beautiful lights come in the mind, and then we can take that further. So simple, so easy to do. That is what's going to be happening here over the next 7 or 8 days. And as long as you follow the instructions, there is no problem. So, that's what we're going to be doing. Any comments or questions? Oh, we've got the walking meditation. I should mention the walking meditation. We've got 3 walking meditation rooms. One on my right, well, so your left, one on your right, and one at the back over there. And you see on those walking meditation rooms, there are red carpets. The red carpet treatment for you to encourage walking meditation. And please keep on those carpets. The reason it was designed in such a way was that if you walk between the carpets, it's cold concrete. And it's not all that smooth. I made sure it was a bit bumpy, just so that people wouldn't walk on it and they don't walk across it. Because if you didn't put those carpets there, I've seen this before, some people, they think that room is not long enough, so they use diagonal. For one corner, which no one else can walk on there without bumping in. So by putting it red carpets along that way means that, you know, you have to follow the carpet. In other words, that, you know, it trains people just to walk backwards and forwards along those carpets. And it means that when you are meditating, you're sitting here, it's right next to the sitting places. So you can sit here if your legs get a bit tired or a bit sore, you can get up there and do some walking meditation. It keeps the meditation practice a bit more continuous. So you don't just sit here and think, oh, I'm hurting, and just go out and just make a cup of tea or coffee when you've already had too much tea or coffee. Instead, you can actually sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk. And it means the meditation actually can be more sustainable and continuous and go deeper. So later on I'll be saying about how that walking meditation happens. If you don't like walking in there, there's other places you can walk along the paths in this retreat center. There's many, many places you can do your walking meditation. Find a nice place for that. And the walking meditation, like other meditations, nice and quiet, relaxed body, peaceful mind. And again, I'll be saying a bit more about it later on. I think that's most of the points covered. Is there anything else which I have not covered, which anybody wants to put up their hand and ask a question? Going, going, gone. Great. So, it is now just 10 minutes to 9. So anybody... Sorry, too late. No, come on.
The interview times with you, do we put our names down for something like that?
Yes, the interviews. That's not tomorrow or the first day, Saturday, because you have to have something to be interviewed about. So the first day is just getting into the place. So they start on Sundays, starting at 9 o'clock till about 10:20. And then in the afternoon, what time's in the afternoon? 3 till 4:30, isn't it? Sorry?
3 till 5.
That's really extra time. I think 4:30 is enough. 3 to 4:30. Be kind to Paul, that jumper. I'm getting old. So 3 to 4:30 usually, and that means that that's a time that's 10 minutes each. And please don't come up and talk about personal problems and marriage and business and what else about the economy. So try and keep it to meditation. And also, if there is some sort of question you have, we also have the opportunity in the evenings, a Q&A time, where you can write your question on a piece of paper. And that is even preferable than your interviews, personal interviews. Because what happens is people ask the question at the interview, and then the next person who comes up asks the same question, and the next person the same question again. And just for efficiency, you know, just put that question down so I can actually answer it all together. And you can share those questions to everybody else here, because a lot of times, you know, your individual questions will be much, much kinder to share them with others so that everyone else, you know, can experience or can hear the answers. So that's always a good thing to do as well. But anyway, those opportunities are open. So we have a piece of paper down there. But just again for kindness, if we have 10-minute slots, they're starting at 9 o'clock. So you don't put, okay, 9 o'clock, you put your name down, and then you put your name down 20 minutes later, somebody else, and then don't leave spaces there, because sometimes then I have to hang around and wait and until the next person comes. So try and just fill them 1, 2, 3, 4 after each other. And it's true that, you know, that there's no limit to the amount of interviews, but don't put your name down in the morning and the afternoon, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So give other people a chance as well. Does that sort of make sense? Okay, excellent. So what else we got? Okay, very good. So now is the time to take a rest, take a break, and wish you all a pleasant night, and see you in the morning. Very good. Now, I have got a little bit of a cold, which I just got this morning. For goodness sake, please don't give me any medicines. I got heaps of medicines. And too often what happens is people give me this medicine and somebody else gives me a medicine and somebody else gives me a medicine. And that some of you I've known for such a long time, you look at me and say, please, please take this medicine, Ajahn Brahm. And I usually give in and say, okay, I'll take it. And I'll take this and I'll take that and I'll take... And I get so much medicine and I promise to take every one of them so that I really get sick then. So I know my body, this will be gone in a day or two. So, just with some rest and some nice, happy abiding here. Very good. Okay, excellent. So at the end of a talk, we do three sadhus. That's getting there, but it's not good enough. Sometimes, you know, imagine, you know, the teacher sitting here, really giving his life to teaching and trying to help out. So please give it some oomph, okay? Sadhu. Sadhu. Big one. Sadhu.